I'd like to introduce our speaker for today, who will speak until 10:10, and then we'll answer any questions from the audience. Let's all welcome Kathy from Laguna.
Hi, I'm Kathy, and I'm an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is July 13th, 1989. And I'm very grateful for that. I was looking at this little sign, the bulletin that says practice your smile. And my first sponsor used to tell me, if you've had a spiritual experience, tell your face. So I'd be walking into the meetings and I want to thank Mary for asking me and my sponsees that came today, Tamora and Heidi, and my sponsor Rod, who I found out went to this school and was a second grader. So, you know, and I went to bed last night thinking about speaking, and I had the weirdest dream, and I woke up this morning, and then I just, you know, I asked God to get me out of the way and speak through me. So if I'm not very good, you can blame him or her. I left the house this morning. My wife and our 37-year-old son were going to play golf, and our three dogs, we have a golden retriever and a beagle and a cocker spaniel. And, you know, I remember before I got sober, driving around and in neighborhoods, and I'd see people in houses, and they'd have dogs, and the lights would be on, and, you know, there weren't quilts, you know, nailed up to the windows, and I remember thinking, you know, how do they do that? How do you get married and have a life? And I just had no clue, my wife has 32 years, or almost 32 years in this program. And the first, I said, do you have any advice for me this morning? She said, just get sober. You know, just get to this part where you get sober, you know. Because I'm pretty sure you guys know how, you know, I got here. But I'm going to go really quickly. I was that little kid in school that bit, you know, their pencil down, that had the teeth marks all over your pencils, you know. I would just chew my pencil, and I chewed my fingernails, and I was just a nervous wreck, you know. I was the only child of two only children. And my grandmother was an only child, and I had no aunts or uncles or cousins. My dad was in the service, and we moved around a lot. My father had been married. My mother was my father's third wife, and she was 19 and he was 36. There's a whole story there, but I don't have time to get in. And, you know, I had a couple half-sisters that I didn't know I had, and he actually was married once after my mother, and I have another half-sister. But there was not a lot of information flowing into my house. The one thing someone spoke about, you know, their mother, and you know, my mother was a child of an alcoholic, and she had a daughter that was an alcoholic, and I guess you'd call her untreated Al-Anon. I don't know. She wasn't a happy camper, but we had a difficult relationship. And but one thing my mother did do was, no matter where we moved, the first thing we would do we'd go to the library, and I'd get my library card. And I can remember the first time that I went to the library with my mother, and I remember I just thought, do people are walking around, they don't know you can go to the library and get all these books free, and they let you keep them. And, you know, I love to read, I still do, and so I would go to the library after school, and I'd get between the stacks, and I'd be on a little stool, and I'd read books. I actually started reading the encyclopedia from A. I don't know how far I got, but, I mean, I was just this weird little kid. I grew up in a home my parents did entertain, and my job was to make my dad's drinks when he came home, which sounds as weird as it is. And he would, you know, pull up, and I'd hear the card on the car, and I'd go run in and start making the Jack and Coke, you know, and I'd lick the little stirrer, and, you know, and then he'd go, Kathy, fix me another one, and I'd make them stronger and stronger. And, you know, alcohol was not that alluring. They'd have parties, and I could have a little cream de menthe, and I'd have sips of beer. I mean, it wasn't, you know, and I held off as long as I could, and I was 14 the first time that I got really drunk, and my parents had been long divorced by then, and I went to a party with my mother and her boyfriend, and they had kegs of beer, and there was beer all over the table, and I don't know why, I was thinking about this, I just started drinking beer off the tables. And all that self, the uncomfortable, the biting the nail, all that went away, and I felt a sense of ease and comfort. I don't know that I got real drunk, but I think I acted a lot more drunk than I was, and there was this boy that was across the way, and I saw him, and he saw me, and that pretty much is my story. Well, not really, but alcohol, people, you know. And that was 14. I don't think I got drunk again until I was 16, and then it was off and running. When I was a junior in high school, I got a job at the at Southwestern Bell Telephone Company. I worked there for 30 years. You could work 2 to 3 days a week. You had to keep your grades up, and every other weekend, and then in the summer, you could work full-time. And I got married to my first extra husband when I was 17. Now, my dad's mother was married 4 times. My dad was married 4 times. I have an older half-sister that was married 4 times. So the marriage did not hold a lot of, I didn't go into anything thinking that. And I didn't want to marry him, but I just didn't want to hurt his feelings. So I married him when I was 17. I had my mother sign for me. And I remember thinking the day I married him, I really don't love him, but oh, well, I'll just get divorced, you know. So we lasted about 7 or 8 months, and he was brushing his teeth one morning, and I said, I don't love you, and I don't want to be married. And he didn't take it well, but I was working at the phone company. I'd graduated high school, and I started working full-time at the phone company. And being an operator, the old cord board operator, I had to work all these crazy shifts. I'd work split shifts and night shifts. The night shifts were the worst, and a woman that I worked with, she said, I can't stay awake. I can't, And she said, well, you ought to go see old Dr. Patton, and he'll give you something to help you stay awake and go to sleep. And then if you have any fluid retention, he gives you fluid pills. So I didn't know I had fluid retention, but I... So I'm taking these diet pills, and I'm cleaning my house. And you hear people say, they clean their house with a toothbrush, the baseboards. I literally did that, And so I'm taking my speed, and I'm drinking, and now I'm divorcing husband number one. A few months later, I'm at a party. My friend is taking me around, introducing me to people. She opens the bathroom door. There's this guy on his knees throwing up in the toilet, and she said, here's Johnny. And I thought, oh, he's cute. I must have him. So he's husband number two. And he was my Barbie dream guy. He was a Budweiser delivery man. So we had the refrigerator on the front porch, with the keg. And Johnny liked to go out and drink after work. And I had been reading my books, and I'm watching the movies. Remember, I'm an only child. There's no information there. I'm just watching people to see what they do and how they act. He would drink, but he would come home. And after a while, I just thought, well, if you can't beat them, join them. I would drink, but I would make new friends and didn't come home. And we did manage to stay married 5 years. I did have a son. He's 37. He's the one that's playing golf. And I was off and running. He was born in 75. And by that time, and one of the things that I want to, make clear is that I'm an alcoholic. And alcohol, as one of my people that I really love in Alcoholics Anonymous, Donnie M. from Louisville, Kentucky, always says that alcohol was the big tent and all these other things were sideshows, but I had a lot of sideshows. And by that time, I hope I don't offend anybody, but by that time, I'm drinking, I'm smoking pot, I'm taking my pills, and... but I've added other kinds of pills, and I'm smoking it, eating it, snorting it, whatever it is that, dropping it, I'm doing it. And I've got this baby now. I divorce, my second husband, and I don't think that I never had a sober I did stay sober when I was pregnant with my son, because somewhere in the back of my mind, I knew that if I started drinking while I was pregnant. And so I read the book, I saw the movies, I wanted to be a good mother, I wanted to have this home, but he wasn't following the script. And then I couldn't follow it either. And we got divorced, and I don't know about you, but I'm one of these people that if someone says, don't ever do this, or you can't do this, I'm going to do it. I don't know what it is. I mean, I'm still that way, you know. But sometimes now I ask if that seems like a good idea. My sponsor will say, well, let's think about that. Let's talk about it. Or let's write about it. I don't like to write. But they didn't tell me when I got here that I was going to have to do writing. I don't like to. So I'm on husband number two. I'm doing it all. And someone said, came over to my house, an old school friend, and he sat in my living room and he put a needle in his arm. And he said, whatever you do, Kathy, don't do this. And I followed it to the gates of insanity. My story, pretty much, my son was 14 when I got sober, and those 14 years, it was, you know, I'm drinking too much. I gotta slow down, man. So I'm just going to do, you know, coke and speed. Oh, that stuff is driving me crazy. Now I'm going to just drink and, you know, smoke a little weed. And you know, really drinking and smoking pot were the base. And then I just built from there, you know, this cornucopia. You know, I was thinking yesterday about the self-loathing and the, words like dignity and integrity never entered in my vocabulary. I do remember sitting in my backyard wondering what peace of mind would feel like. You know, I had a joint in one hand and a drink in the other, but I was, you know, I just thought, what would that be like, you know, to be able to have this mind stop, you know, turn off. And I can remember when I first got sober, I'd lay in bed and I'd just say the Serenity Prayer over and over and over again. And then I'd switch to the Lord's Prayer. Because if I started thinking, my mind, and still today, you know, it's a dangerous place to be. I don't go there without a gun. It's not as frequent. I know Julia's going to know this, but that frequency, intensity, and duration, you know, it doesn't last as long. It's not as bad, you know. But I found number three, the third extra husband. And as my disease progressed, my taste in men got just as, and I called this guy was my drug dealer. And so we got married, and it was horrible. One of my goals, the benchmark when I got here, was I wanted to live somewhere where the police didn't come. That was the height. You know, I didn't set it very high. You know, mine was, you know, let's, you know, get in a fight, and they call the cops, and somebody's going to jail, and my son is crying. And I mean, it's a nightmare, and you all know what that's like. Now, when am I stopping? Oh, God, I got to get sober. So this went on for a long time. I got sober in 89. I had gotten hepatitis. My son at 14 just said, you know what, I hate you. And I can remember saying, you know what, I hate me too. Big deal, you know. And I think Risa said, you know, that hurting and harming. You know, I hurt and harmed people, but I didn't care. I remember the day that I had my son. And I remember thinking, oh, my God, this is what they're talking about when they say you love something. I had never loved anything the way I love this boy. I mean, it's like that. For the first time in my life, I felt like, oh, I know what it means, you know, to step in front of a speeding car or take a. I would do anything for this baby other than 14 years later when he said, Mom, please don't drink. Please don't drink when you come to my games. It embarrasses me. You know, don't drink around my friends. And I'd say, you know what, let me tell you something. When you put food on this table and keep these lights on, you can tell me what to do. But don't tell me not to drink. You know, I would smoke pot in the car with him. And he would say, Mom, my stomach's hurting. I'd say, roll down the window. That's the kind of mother I was. That's the kind of person that I was when I got here. Those were my tools for living. That's how I rolled, you know. And but my third husband, he had started. It had gotten very physically abusive, and you know, I'm talking guns to the head and all this stuff. It was a nightmare. So I had a friend that through a series of events that had said, you know, she was going to counseling. I started going to this counseling group. I would, you know, have a drink and smoke a joint on the way there. But, you know, and one of the women in the group said, you know, you might want to go to Al-Anon or ACOA. And I thought, well, that's my problem. Everybody I'm with drinks and drugs, so I'll go. And so I got my ice chest and my styrofoam ice chest. Now this place that I was going, this AA meeting, I was going to Al-Anon meeting, was maybe a mile or two from the house. But I iced down my screw top bottle of wine, I rolled a couple joints, and I drove up there. And strangely, someone at the Al-Anon meeting suggested that I might be interested in going to the other side of the room. And it was, you know, kind of rude, but I thought, well, okay. You know. So I actually went to a couple meetings. I came in right when the meeting started, speaker meetings, open meetings. And I'd sit next to the wall, and the minute the meeting was over, I went on one big last run, and my ex-husband brought me to the meeting in a car that was a Delta 88 that someone had scratched F-U-C. Okay, on the side of it, so we called it the UCK Mobile, you know, and he kind of pushed me out of the car, and I went to that meeting, and that was July 13th, 1989. I've not had a drink or a drug since. And I did not know. I can remember so vividly, once the alcohol and drugs, you know, kind of came out of my system, hearing people say it's but a symptom, I remember thinking, man, I'm really screwed up. I mean, I thought my problem was the alcohol and the drugs. And I remember an old-timer saying, you know, if alcohol and drugs are your problem, Alcoholics Anonymous is probably not for you. And I thought, well, I'm screwed then. But he said, if alcohol is your problem, when you stop drinking, you should be okay. And, you know, when I stop drinking and I stop drugging, I'm not okay. I'm in pain. Everything is so... You know, I'm tense, I'm irritable, I'm discontent, I'm just, you know, I'm not a fun, you know, people would go, here, have a drink, you know, I mean, I'm out of my mind. And realizing that, and realizing that there were these steps on the wall, and I heard, you know, 30 days, find someone that has something you want, and there was this little gray-headed old woman, and I was looking for a mother, and she was the farthest thing from a mother. Once I asked her, she was not motherly, but... she did ask me, are you willing to go to any length? And I said, yes, you know. She quickly told me she did not want what I had, that I wanted what she had. And if I wanted what she had, I had to do what she did. And I followed her around, and I didn't argue with her. Laura would tell me something to do, and I did it. We didn't debate it. We didn't, you know, I didn't tell her I have a great idea. I'd get off the phone, and I'd think, God almighty, you know. You're kidding me, really, you know. One time I called her with some great big problem I was having. She said, I'll tell you what, why don't you meet me up at the group? We'll get up there early. And I thought, well, finally, she's going to pay some attention to me. So I go up there early, and she said, well, let's go ahead and start putting some chairs up. And I thought, well, hell, you know, maybe we can sit down, you know. And then she said, oh, let's help Bob get the coffee. By that time, some old-timer, you know, they always come in early, and he's making the coffee. And by that time, people are coming, and I don't have time to talk to her. And I thought, well, I'll wait till after the meeting. The meeting goes on, and then I realize I don't feel so bad. I don't need to talk to her that much. She goes, okay, what was it you want to talk to me about? I said, I'm okay now. I'm okay. And I learned a valuable lesson, and Laura really had me get into service work very quickly because I need to, I may not be much, but I'm all I think about. And I don't think about you. I'm thinking about me, or what you think about me. And so thinking about others is not something that comes naturally to me. I got into service work. She had me doing the steps right out of the book. I did run up to her with this worksheet that someone had given me, and she said, that's really sweet, honey. But we're going to work it just like in the book. We're going to make our columns. And You know, I started working the steps with that woman. She was my sponsor for my first 3 years. She had a stroke. She passed away. And I have a sponsor in Texas that I still have to this day. Laura lived in a mobile home. She had two daughters. She never did any drugs. You know, she drank NyQuil. She kept a bottle of NyQuil, she said, on her nightstand. And when she'd wake up in the middle of the night, she'd drink NyQuil. But I don't know why, but we related to each. Well, I do know why. It's that language of the heart. And, you know, she never had any, you know, huge pearls of wisdom. You know, I can remember the first time I spoke, and she said, you know, God can use the dullest tool in the shed, Kathy. And then she'd say stuff like, well, some are sicker than others. And I'd say, oh, you're telling me that. But I think she was talking about me. And never once, because I was waiting, I would call her every day, and sometimes three or four times a day. Never once did I hear a tone in her voice, and I was waiting. Because the minute I heard that, which I'm good at, you know, doing that side thing, but she never did. I'd call her, and I'd say, what are you doing? She'd say, well, I'm in the bath. I'm getting ready for work. I'd call her at work, and I'd go, I just can't make it. I can't do it. She said, well, have they got anything? Are you at work? And I say, yes. And she goes, well, have they got anything up there for you to do? And I'd go, yeah. And she'd go, well, try doing it, you know. You know, and I heard these things that, you know, like I couldn't get up, you know, on time, you know. And then I, you know, this old timer, you know, he's like, well, I'll tell you what you do if you want to wake up, always be on time. And I'm like, got my pencil, you know, I'm ready. And he said, you set your alarm the night before, you go to bed, and when it goes off, you get up. I mean, I just thought these people were so smart. I did not know that. I was like, oh my God, I had trouble writing checks when I didn't have any money in the bank. And my sponsor said, you know, you have to close your checking account. You're going to start paying cash for everything. And when the money's all gone, you don't have any money. You know, because my thing was, used to, you could write a check on Wednesday and it wouldn't clear till Friday. I was like a financial genius around kiting checks, you know. I'd go to one grocery store and write a check, and then I'd go to another grocery store and cash a check for cash and put it in there. I mean, and I thought this was okay in sobriety. You know, sobriety is so much more, I found out, than just not drinking. You know, my son, who had gone to live with his dad, stayed there for about 6 or 7 months, and I can remember telling Lauren, when I got sober, we didn't have cell phones. We had pay phones on every corner, and you had to make sure it worked. You had to have a quarter, and if someone else was there, you got to get them all. I'd just be overwhelmed with shame and remorse and regret, because I had a lot of damage. I had done a lot of damage. I'd stole from my mother, her checking account. I emptied a savings account of hers that she had mistakenly put on me on the account. It was 7 years. I was 7 years sober before I had a key to my mother's house. I said, you know, all this other stuff, but how am I going to make it up to my son? And she said, I don't know. The answers are the same. You stay sober, Kathy. And some, you know, and I just think there's got to be something more. It's got to be more than this. But, you know, I heard that gentleman talking about, you know, just doing what people told me. And I believed you, because the insanity that was in my head, I know where it got me. You know, it got me with a drink and a needle in my arm. You were telling me that I could have a new way of life, not the Kathy way of life, but your way, a new way. I wanted a new way of life. I didn't want to have to live with the insanity in my head. And you told me that there was a step that I could make those things right, or if they couldn't be made right, that I'd be okay with it. And so 6 months, my son was over at his dad's, and he called me and he said, I want to come home. And I thought, you know, all right, now, you know, he was 15 by that time, and it wasn't, you know, a 15-year-old boy, and he played football, and we had our ups and downs, and, you know, we got into counseling together, because I did a lot of damage to him. And we now have three grandchildren. I have a 16-year-old, a 9-year-old, and a 7-year-old, and they've never seen me drink. And my son, he went into the Marine Corps right after he graduated high school. And I had made amends to him when he was 15. And it was one of those, you know, I'm in AA now. I mean, I hadn't even gotten to that step, you know. I went, and but he came home from the Marine Corps, and I said, you know, I need to make amends to you. And he's like, Mom, I'm okay. You don't have to do that. I turned out all right. And I said, no, Brett, we got to sit down. And I showed him in the book, and I said, I got to do this. And it was difficult. You know, I had done some things and said some things, and he grew up in a house that was filled with violence and drugs. And I thought, there's no way this can ever be made right, ever. And I went to him, and my sponsor, one of the first things that Laura told me was, you do never say you're sorry, because we all know you're sorry, Kathy. That's how she talked to me. And she said, you go to people and you tell them that you regret, you so regret your behavior, and you're willing to do anything that you can to make that situation right. And that's how I went to Brett. You know, I told him some of the things that I remember doing and happening, and I told him, I so regret that. I so regret that you didn't have a sober mother, and I'm willing to do anything. And by that time, he had had my oldest granddaughter. And he said, you'd be a good grandmother. I said, is there anything that I can do? And he's like, no. And I said, Brett, is there anything I can do to make this right? And he said, you'd be a good grandma to Phoebe. And I said, I can do that. And I was in the delivery room when she was born. And I'm a good grandmother today. And I'm a good mother. I may be better tomorrow, but I'm the best mother and grandmother I know how to be today. And we have a wonderful relationship. I was sober 14 years. And one of the things I wanted more than anything was, I wanted a relationship. I wanted a relationship that I saw people in Alcoholics Anonymous having. Not a lot of you, but some of you. And I'm being. But, you know, that boy meets girl or girl meets girl. Well, anyway, and they said, if you stay sober, it'll be someone that you never would think that you would be with. Well, I went to I could go into some things. I mean, everybody in the 70s and 80s was doing it, I thought. I don't know. I asked my sponsor one time. I said, well, didn't everybody? And she goes, oh, well, I did, but I don't know if everybody did. But anyway, I went to a women's conference. And there across a crowded room, I saw this woman. And anyway, we've been together 9 years. We've been married. It'll be 3 years in February. She's got 31 years. We have a sober home. And I have a life beyond my wildest dreams. God is, you know, we work the traditions in our marriage and in our relationship. You know, my sponsor one time told me, she said, you have to go out with someone 6 times before you can sleep with them. And I said, well, does coffee after the meeting count? She said, no. And then she said, you know, and when you can pray with someone beside the bed, then you'll know what true intimacy is. Then you'll know what a real relationship is. We pray together. You know, we stop sometimes when something's going on, and Stacey will go, do you want to pray with me? And I'll say yes, you know. I care more about her happiness than I do my own. Well, maybe. I don't know. But most days I do. But she's I respect her. I try not to use profanity directed towards her. That was a big thing. You know, I try to be a woman of integrity and dignity today, because I'm an alcoholic. I want more, and I still want more. I want more dignity, more integrity. I want, you know, more. I want to continue to grow in this program. I'm not done, you know. And if you stick around and if you're new, you know, don't quit before the miracle. I mean, it's so much more than not drinking. I have a life beyond my wildest dreams, and I do have an equal opportunity God today. And, you know, if it happened for me, you know, it can happen for you. So thank you.